Everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster, back after a little week hiatus. We're here to bring you some delightfully fresh content to get you into the weekend. Speaking of fresh, we got Mac McIntyre. He's fresh.
I could do.
Daryl Loomis, who's dope.
Totally.
And Eric Astroslager, who's gnarly.
Word up.
That's right. So, with that, I think we've run out of our early 90s qualifications. So let's get right into what's been happening currently. So, Mac, why don't you kick us off? What have you to report?
Well, we went and saw Die Hard 5.
That's right. Now, what's
good
the
day?
Yeah, it's full
good
name,
day
please.
To Die Hard.
They work hard on focus testing those titles. So,
Good Day to Die Hard.
That's good. Thank you.
That's too much of a mouthful. I'm just going to call it Die Hard 5.
That sounds fine, too. Yes, a little sojourn out to the theaters to check this out. So,
all the reviews have just been, like, savaging this movie. I mean, everyone's just been really negative about it, just really taking it to task. I thought it was kind of fun.
I liked it, too.
Maybe it was expectations or I don't know what, but I really had a good time with it.
I mean, this is one of those things where I guess I don't know what people were expecting, maybe. I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, it was
Die Hard, after all.
I mean, it was, for one thing, it was, and I guess this would be kind of our, I guess I'm going to step on your toes here, Matt, because we talk about this, but,
sure.
I mean, it wasn't PG-13, right? You got hard R, Die Hard action, a lot of swearing, a lot of, like, some big violence, a fantastic final bad guy death scene, practical action, right? I mean, like, big car chase in the beginning, done largely practical, as far as I can tell. They really blew stuff up, it seemed. I think, like, there's some helicopter sequences that may have been CGI added, and certainly Bruce Willis, slow motion flying through the air, is not really Bruce Willis, you know, flying through the air, and I'll grant that. But, I don't know, it was, I think I heard people criticizing the fact that it was too short. But if it was, like, an extra 15 minutes, I could think that people would think it would be too long. It was 97 right. minutes, so it was lean and mean and moved fast.
Yes, so, most movies these days are, like, 140.
That's right.
I mean,
absolutely. So, I mean, Judd Apatow movies are like...
Oh, God, I know.
They're clocking in, like, Roots, you know? They're all... So, I don't know. So this, to me, and it definitely felt like a throwback to kind of the burly 90s action movies. So, I don't know. But I'm with you, Mac. I had a good time with it. The plot was goofy. You know, the lines were goofy, but what do you expect, I guess?
Now, is this – do you think the movie was actually good, or were you just in the right mood? Because I remember going to the theater and seeing Broken Arrow and loving it.
I know what you mean.
So I understand the phenomenon of just being in the right mood at the right place at the right time.
It could be expectations. You know, it could be we had really lowered expectations, so it ended up better than we thought.
I would say this. If this movie was called Super Action Movie and had Die Hard 5, I still would have really liked it a lot. I know, because it hit the stuff that, you know – that I liked in my action movies. That's pretty
well, I did.
It.
I did some looking around, and I was reading some of the other reviews, and this is not like a statistical analysis or anything, but I just in my own observations, I found sort of three ongoing threads in a lot of other reviews. One is that people say McClane is no longer an everyman; that he's just become unkillable.
Right, right.
And he's just indestructible now. Whereas in the earlier Die Hards, he was just more like this ordinary guy.
Yeah, which, if we really think about that, in Die Hard 3, he was surfing a dump truck. In Die Hard 2, he was ejecting out of exploding planes, you know.
And
Die Hard 1,
he jumped off
of the fire hose, right?
Right.
So, but you're right. He is more superhero, but I don't think he was... I think that everyman thing kind of that sale shipped a while ago.
Can we at least acknowledge that there's only one really great Die Hard movie?
Yes.
And that there's a pretty good Die Hard movie, and then there's 3, 4, and 5. Or at least 3 and 4. I don't know.
Wow, what? Really? I'm a big fan of 3.
Really? 3?
Oh, 3 is good times.
3's okay.
I mean, it's wildly entertaining.
It's fine, but I mean, but compared to the first Die Hard, I mean, maybe I'm putting up unrealistic, comparisons.
Well, the first Die Hard was sort of revolutionary, I thought. You know?
It still holds up. I don't know.
I mean, it's a kind of movie that, like, any time other movies are called the Die Hard of blank, that tells you you're dealing with probably something pretty noteworthy. So anything following up, you know, it's not, you know, it's going to kind of fall short of that original. So, I mean, I find the Die Hard, even Die Hard 4, which is, you know, certainly the craziest and the lamest of the bunch, I found value in it as well. Just, you know, and to answer your question, and we'll get right back to your stuff, Mac, too. But that's your question, Eric. I would say that, I mean, it is a, it's got to be qualified. I mean, it is a good movie for a, you know, a rootin' tootin' action movie. You know, that's what I would say. So, I mean, because some movies that try to do that fail utterly. Like Taken 2 failed utterly, and it was so bad it retroactively hurt the first Taken. You know, like, so, I mean, I think there's room to criticize that stuff, but I mean, I don't know. It's certainly, and I think Frame of Mind is something that expectations certainly come into play, but as far as the genre and what you expect from the genre in general, thought it was a surprise. But continue on, Mac.
Right. Complaint number two is all about McClane's son. They said that the son was boring, he has no chemistry with Willis, or even the fact that there's a son at all. Nobody seems to like anything having to do with McClane's son.
Okay.
So, I'm not, I kind of see what they're going for, but, I mean, the son wasn't overly annoying.
No.
He didn't hijack the whole movie. Maybe some producer somewhere is hoping to spin the son off into his own series of Die Hard movies. I'm not so sure I'd be in line for that. But
That's not happening. I mean, I think Jai Courtney, who plays him, is kind of a – he's been up and coming in some stuff, but sorry, not to the point where I think he'd assume the mantle, you know? And he was really a foil just for Bruce Willis's one-liners, right?
Pretty much, yeah. There's pretty much only two scenes where they kind of connect, and the movie's so fast-paced that those scenes are there. They say what they need to say, and then we move right along.
Yeah.
And then complaint number three is – Chernobyl figures into the plot of the movie, and everybody thinks that it's just so stupid to have Chernobyl in the movie. So
yeah, that's kind of weird.
I mean, it's kind of key to the little plot twist, which actually I found pretty surprising and halfway decent. But it was kind of out there, but I mean, not to the point where like what? It's not like they ended up, you know. In the space station fighting terrorists. I don't know.
Right. So. For what it basically Chernobyl in the plot, really it's just a place to go to have an action set piece.
You know, sure.
It's a big abandoned building that they can blow up and run around in. So it could be, you know, just your stock, you know, abandoned warehouse that so many cop shows and they're have their gunfights in. But.
And also housing Chernobyl coffin, so to speak. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, there's some plot that's devoted to it, but, yeah. So, I don't know, yeah.
There we go. I mean, maybe our thoughts will change once it hits Blu-ray and we take a closer look, but for now, I thought it was a really fun movie.
I think so. I mean, you've got a good point about Broken Arrow, which is objectively ridiculous, but...
For whatever reason, I saw that in the theater and I was totally pumped.
Me too. I think, whatever it is. But I mean, I think... There was a lot of stuff we hadn't seen before, and John Woo was just kind of unhinged. And, you know, Travolta was at the height of his powers. You know, and so you've got to help. I mean, so and Howie Long's Flat Top was overwhelming. But you're right.
I have not seen that movie since the theater. I probably will never watch it again just to – I know it would just, like, all fall apart, like, you know.
But, see, I guess I don't find it unwatchable. Like, I would never watch Taken 2 again, ever. You know, I would never watch Taken 2. And I just keep coming back to that just because it's one of my more disappointing movies I've seen recently because I like the first one so much. You know, but like I could watch Broken Arrow just like I could watch Firestorm, even though they're both moronic. You know, so moronic. But there is entertainment to be had there, at least for me. And, you know, for Die Hard, I think Mac, I lean over and say to you, boy, this thing will kick ass in a home theater setup.
Yes.
Right? And it will, man, it will. Fire that thing up and it will. So.
I mean, if given a choice between, you know, dumb action movies, I would take this over Battleship any day.
Of course, because Battleship was dumb. Like,
it's a bold position you take, Mac.
Even as recent as The Last Stand, which we had seen as well. You know, I mean, like we left that thinking, yeah, this is. I mean, I kind of really soured on it more and more, but it was like this stuff. Maybe it's like movies that just don't kind of. Like, The Last Stand really was really dumb because it didn't have a sense of what it wanted to be, I thought. You know, is it a slapstick comedy or is it this hard R movie? And it just never measured up to its own trappings, I think, what it wanted to be. So that's why
There was a lot of filler in Last Stand, a lot of subplots that really weren't necessary.
My last image of that is not Schwarzenegger being a crotchety old badass at stupid Johnny Knoxville pole vaulting a telephone pole. So Battleship is just objectively terrible. I mean, that's just like a terrible movie. So
it doesn't know how dumb it is.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. So I don't know. I guess this is probably, you know, this gets pretty deep into far as how you approach movies. But as far as someone who is, you know, for me as a fan of the old school R-rated action movie with effects that aren't CGI, and isn't up its own butt, isn't super bloated, trying to do anything more than is, I thought Die Hard was a success in that fact. So,
that's cool. I'm still gonna try and to tell you you're wrong for liking it. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I read several reviews. A lot of them, like Max said, are very kind of harsh. I will give a shout out to our own Patrick Bromley's review over on If This Movie, which I felt was a very, you know, well balanced. He came down on the side of not liking it, but I think he wasn't so hard as other reviewers were. So good for him.
All right.
And good for you. And good for everyone.
Everyone
sees movies. I haven't seen it. I don't know. What do I know?
Everybody gets an award. Everyone gets a car.
Ooh, really?
Yes.
Everyone gets a puppy.
Everyone gets a puppy. All right, Mac, anything else to say on that? I know we kind of
that
conversation.
Yeah, that should that should do it. That was just kind of my three things that I wrote down as I was reading all the reviews.
All right, Daryl.
Let's see. I have not been to the theater, which is not an anomaly. But I did watch finally sit down and watch the first episode of House of Cards. The Netflix exclusive show with Kevin Spacey, which was interesting. Have any of you seen it?
I have not.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I watched the whole thing.
Have you watched the whole thing?
Yeah, I did.
Does he keep talking to the stupid camera?
Yeah, that's part of the show.
Okay. That's the big complaint that I have. It's well produced. It's well acted. Everything about it seems, and I'm going to continue with it, but everything about it seems fairly good. And I know that that's a thing that David Fincher likes to do. But when he's standing at the inauguration of the president and he's talking to the camera, I just want his wife to slap him and ask him who the hell he's talking to. I've never really liked that so much. But I did enjoy the plotting and I'm looking forward to seeing how the story plays out. I think the big thing since we last met up is the fairly disappointing, return of Community.
Yes.
Yeah.
Second episode I thought was much better than the first. But still a large step down from what I'm used to. And so that's disappointing.
I think, you know, there was one line in it that just I really hated, and I may never watch Community again. It was when Abed turned to the camera and said something like, "Remember when the show used to be at our community college?"
Yes.
Screw you and your fake meta. You know, I just, this is like, talk about just counter to what that show has always been about. So, I don't know.
I'm going to see it through, but, you know, it gives me a little bit less hope for the return of Arrested Development.
Less hope, oh yeah.
Less hope, just because not that the people are different or anything like that, but I guess I'm trying at this point to temper my expectations a little bit. And now, even though the last episode of Parks and Recreation was pretty good, there's almost nothing on television that I want to watch anymore.
Yeah,
and that's sad to me.
I don't even really like Parks and Rec that much. That was only salvaged by some great Ron Swanson and Andy Dwyer stuff.
Yes.
Now, I've completely lost all interest in anything related to Leslie and Ben and that whole orbit.
They're going to get married this week.
I mean, all the plots are the same. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, it's really fallen off. And I guess the only saving grace I have at this point is Archer, which continues to get better every year.
All right. All right, on that glum note, Eric, what do you got?
Hey.
All right, we're gonna cycle back around because the only things on my list to talk about were House of Cards and Community, so I'll offer my opinion. Community, yeah, I'm in the same place as everyone else. It's weird because it's not like it's outright terrible. It's just that it's as though someone decided to make a version of Community and they'd only ever watched like with the sound off, or they've only seen a few episodes, and they decided to like, so it's almost like a fan fiction version of Community or something. I can't get my head around it.
Cause yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
The first episode, it was interesting that they had that sort of, you know, not interesting because it was good in the show, but they had that fake sitcom setup. And, you know, compared to the fake sitcom, the regular part of Community felt like Community. But compared to last season, past seasons of Community, the new Community feels like that sitcom version. You know what I mean? It's like none of what was great about the show wasn't that they had references and that was all this meta stuff. It's that whatever they did either said something about the characters, was driven by, you know, some personality aspect of the characters, you know, told you something about these people. You know, in this first episode, they had Abed stuck in his own mind and kind of, you know, breaking down because he was realizing that, you know, that they were going to come to an end at the college. And they've done that at least two or three times before, much better, you know, ways in Abed's uncontrollable Christmas. They had him, you know, shutting down and going to this claymation world. And then last year with all the Dreamatorium stuff, they did it, and they did it so much better. This time it was just Abed's weird. He likes sitcoms, so he's shutting down. And we didn't learn anything about him. He and Troy apparently are totally fine with going different directions now. All that stuff's gone. The Troy Britta stuff could be interesting if they did anything with it, but that first season, the first episode, they just fought in a wishing well for some reason. None of that, you know, did anything with the characters. And by the time we got to the end, it was just, you know, Pierce with the ball joke. Man, I'm getting madder just talking about it. So anyway, Community's not very good. I didn't like the second episode very much at all. And I think the main thing for me, even beyond all the character stuff, is that I'm just not laughing anymore.
Yeah.
I watch an entire episode and I chuckle once. Community used to be the show, even from the very first season, was a show that I laughed hardest at every single week. And now I just don't laugh anymore.
The laughter's dead.
It's sad. Now there aren't many laughs in House of Cards. I will say, Daryl, you should keep going with it. I think it starts a bit slow. It started a bit slow for me. I don't mind that talking to the camera thing because it's sort of like a breaking the fourth wall. The action sort of stops and he just kind of does it. And that's, you know, it is what it is. But I think what's good about the show is the acting, is the writing, is the production value, and the fact that it's on a different Netflix. It's pretty impressive. I'd say it's at least a Showtime level quality show.
Absolutely. And one thing that's surprising to me about it is that I guess I should have understood going into it, but looking at it, all the episodes are different lengths, which is a small thing, but it presents it more like chapters of a book than episodes of a show, where everything has to fit in a certain, you know, 47-minute time slot. So the first episode's like 53 minutes, the second one's like 44 minutes, and, you know, it goes on like that. And I think that's a really interesting way to approach a show, so that it doesn't have to, like, shoehorn an extra 4 minutes into the show that don't belong because you've got to fill your time.
Right. And this is I think they did it for their previous show, Lilyhammer, which may have been their first show. I tried it and didn't like it, but you know, they released all 13 episodes at once. It's how they're going to do it for the rest of Arrested Development, and it's an interesting model for this kind of show. I mean, you could sit down and watch it all in a weekend, but it took me, you know, a couple of weeks to watch it, and I'm not sure that it's going to hurt the show to do that. Apparently, it's been doing very well. I think, like I said, I think the show started off slow. The fact that it deals so much in this minutia of politics on kind of the lawmaking end, I don't think helps the show very much. It takes a while to kind of figure out what everyone is really going for and then if it's really worth it. But it definitely picks up, especially toward the end. So I think it's worth watching.
Definitely keep going. I'll definitely keep going on it.
So that's mostly it. We have started Justified. We're like four episodes in, I think, and that's good so far.
Yeah, I only watched the first couple.
Okay, yeah, I'm not going to say anything about it. But yeah, it's good. It's Justified. So.
All right. Doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement to me, but
No. We are enjoying it. It's one of the few shows that we would buy.
Gotcha.
Week to week, so
that makes sense. That's a ringing endorsement. Yeah, I got nothing much to add besides lauding Die Hard and dumping on NBC's Thursday night lineup. But I will say, a little glimmer of hope in TV. I know no one else watches this but me, but I have been enjoying the show Supernatural. It was kind of a little hit and miss. This is the only genre television I've watched in years, but I've kind of been enjoying where it's going, and it's it's kind of righted itself. So for the two 17-year-old girls on the Snore podcast, I'm with you, ladies. It's good stuff. Okay, moving on. Stuff we got for the site. Mac.
Yes, the review is already up on the site. You can go check it out now, but I reviewed the next newest volume of Young Justice from Cartoon Network. Remember, this is the show about all the, don't call them sidekicks, but the teen heroes who are distaffs from the Justice League. Yes. So, you know, Superboy, Wonder Girl, Robin, and their whole crowd. And this is the first part of the second season. It's 5 years later, so everybody's lives have gone off in different directions, and there's a ton of new characters. And it's kind of a mess. The first season had sort of one through line throughout everything that happened, which is the kids wanted the respect of the adults. But in this season, there's so many plots and so many characters that they're just going off in all these different directions, and it's very, very confusing and complex, especially for a cartoon. But there's some good points too, though. That's, you know, there's a lot of action, there's a lot of excitement, there's a lot of, you know, callbacks to the comics, and so it was fun. But it's just, I just really hope that they're going somewhere with all this, and they can tie up all these various plot threads. And I'll say this: you remember in the first season, I kept saying that Aqualad, that was too dorky of a name for a superhero.
Yeah.
That no one shouldn't be calling himself Aqualad.
Right.
Well, the creators, you know, really showed me up on that one, because this new season we get a new superhero from Atlantis, and his name, are you ready for this? His name is Lagoon Boy.
That's good. Lagoon Boy.
Lagoon Boy.
Nice. Oh man. I wonder if Lagoon Boy means something in French. No, objection.
Well, in Atlantean, his name is
Lagoon Boy, I think.
Oh, is he Mouth from the Goonies? Is that who he is? All right, sounds like the creative forces are really hard at work over there, Mac. It's good to hear. Yeah. All right, Daryl.
Let's see. Nothing huge. From the last time we talked, Eric had asked me about this movie called this horror movie called Smiley. What I thought about it, because I had seen it, and I commented at the time that it looked like one of the Kevin Williamson covers from the 90s. But I wound up reviewing it, and it's not a good horror movie, but it is interesting in a way that I don't know that I've ever really seen before. So not to spoil anything for you 9-10 people who are going to see it out there, but the killer is implicated as part of the 4chan community.
Mm-hmm.
And then in extension, the quote hacktivist group Anonymous is mentioned. So the trolls on 4chan were not happy. This is all in real life. Were not happy about all of this. And so the trolls got trolled by this movie, and then they went and started making the director's life hell.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And posting his information online, and he apparently received some death threats. Apparently, he appeared on the Today Show talking about this stuff, which I don't watch the Today Show, so I would have missed it in the first place. But I found all of that stuff a very interesting corollary to this otherwise pretty cruddy, not bloody enough slasher movie. But yeah.
All right. Sounds like the backstory may be more interesting than the actual movie, huh?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
All right, Eric?
Last week, and there are reviews up on the site, I reviewed a documentary called Side by Side, which was produced by Keanu Reeves, not directed by him, but it's a fascinating documentary that looks at film versus digital. And the main meat of the documentary is interviews with all of these famous directors, editors, cinematographers, actors, the Lucas Cameron, David Fincher, Martin Scorsese, Danny Boyle, Steven Soderbergh, Wally Pfister, Chris Nolan, all these people. Keanu Reeves sat down with them and asked them, you know, to just talk about their experiences and talk about, you know, the change in technology and the format shift and all that stuff. And it's really interesting. It's a little dry in places, but just getting that many, you know, that many people who know what they're talking about, who are, you know, big, in the filmmaking world down, you know, sitting down and talking about this stuff. It's just definitely worth checking out. So I recommend that. This week, I am reviewing the Ultimate Collector's Edition of Monsters Incorporated on Blu-ray. This followed up the original release on Blu-ray back in, I think, 2009. This new version has a 7.1 track, and it's got 3D and the Blu-ray and the DVD and stuff. And I think when the movie came out, it's hard to remember now, but I seem to remember it being considered sort of a lesser Pixar movie, probably only because there are only a few before it. But I think since it came out, it's gotten, I think, more of the respect that it deserves. It's a really great movie. I think I'm not sure what Monster University is going to be, the sequel that doesn't really feel necessary. But I think that movie, I think, gets me partly as a father with a daughter, but just, you know, just as a good Pixar movie. It's well constructed. They do a great job of giving you a lot of information, a lot of exposition in clever ways, among other things. But it's been fun checking that out.
All right. So since we were on last week, did I mention my love for the documentary Undefeated 2 weeks ago? I don't recall. Have I?
I don't believe so.
No. So that was a 2011 Oscar winner that for some reason because I don't watch Oscar shows, and you think I should pay attention to this stuff, but it just eluded me for some reason, and it's just now getting your home video release, and it is fantastic. One of my favorite movies, documentary or otherwise, I've seen in a long, 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 long time.
It's like a Friday Night Lights kind of thing?
It's just basically these filmmakers are, they come to Memphis to maybe do a feature on this great high school football recruit who's splitting his time living at home and living with another family to get his grades up, but they end up following a team for a season. But it's just more than that. It's way more, and I don't even want to say anything. I just highly recommend it. It will definitely move and groove you. So I enjoyed it a great deal, to the fact that I evangelize about it to anyone I see.
Is it better than Rudy?
Rudy, I think we've established how we feel about Rudy on the podcast. So, yeah, Rudy blows. This does not. This is great.
But now, say hypothetically,
yeah,
if someone is not a fan of football too much.
It's more than football. Yes, man. Oh, yeah. It is. Yes, it certainly is. I mean, what it really does well is that if you like football, there's a lot of cool stuff in there. Like, you know, you get great game footage. It's a great sports movie. But what will bring grown men to their knees weeping is the stuff that's beyond football. So it's, yeah, highly recommended for any flavor of person you might be and anything you may or may not enjoy. I don't care. It's good. It's great. Everyone should watch it. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. And then real quick, Battlestar Galactica Blood and Chrome is like a 90-minute web series. They turned into a pilot that may or may not go to series. I'm not sure. It's a prequel to Battlestar Galactica, telling the adventures of a young, plucky William Adama when he was a hotshot pilot. And I'm using all those cliches because they use all those cliches in that movie as well. So he's young, he's plucky, he's a hotshot. He's a loose cannon. And it's kind of interesting. It was pretty good. It's all filmed against, like, green screen. So the CGI is actually worse than the 2004 Battlestar Galactica, but I think their budget was a lot more limited. But partly wonders why can't they just jump on those old computers and fire up some of the CGI. But
right.
So I don't. So I would have to trust word of mouth from trusted sources that, you know, if it ever made it to a series, you know, people have to say, oh, you should check this out. It's really great. Because I'm a BSG fanboy, but not, you know, this one would take a little more to keep me engaged. So and it's like everything is kind of like just super oversaturated. So it looks like you're in a hazy dream state when you're watching it. It's kind of odd. So
the cover of it made it look almost animated to me.
Yeah, right. It's not. And I was confused even before I fired up the Blu-ray. But I mean, it's live action, but it's green screen the whole way. It's like 300 or something, you know. So everything is just CGI back there, and the effects are of middling variety. But it's the story itself and the acting that doesn't quite land so much. So yeah, so we'll see. We'll see if Sci-Fi takes up the series or not. That's all I got. Mac, why don't you bring us onward and upward?
Sure. Let's take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. And you listening at home can play along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the DVD releases tab, and then scroll down and hit the link for the cover art gallery for February 26th. We'll just see what's on the list.
It's got a handful of things here. So, see, there's a Barbie movie for Eric.
No more. You know, even though I'd rather see The Master, I'd probably rather review the Barbie movie. There you go.
Yeah, I want to see The Master too. I've heard lots of good things about it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be stunning on Blu-ray too. So
another week, another Power Rangers release. So they released the first season, then they released the entire series, and now they're releasing the second season. So I don't know what their schedule is.
This is season 2, volume 1.
Oh yeah, great.
That's for all the Twilight fans, we got Breaking Dawn part 2 and the extended edition of part 1.
That's gonna be exciting. I hope it's like the Lord of the Rings where it's like 45 minutes longer.
I don't think you're going to hurt anyone who actually wants to watch that with that.
Yeah.
They would love it if it was 45 minutes longer.
Oh, I'm sure they would. Me too. Let's see. Who's that? An old Dolph Lundgren movie?
I don't know who's that on the cover. That looks like that's weird offspring of Steven Seagal and Scott Baio. I don't know who that person is. That's supposed to be Dolph Lundgren?
It's Lundgren. It's also got George Segal in it. 93. I never heard that. I never heard of that. Mm,
the Joshua Tree. Huh?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never heard of it either.
But apparently there's a car chase with some cops.
Yeah.
And,
background.
Well, fantastic. Yeah.
Well, we got a small sample size here, so I think you kind of hit on all the highlights. So I don't think there's quite enough to do with any really sleazy sounding DVD release. Although Girls Against Boys was an industrial rock band from the 90s. Anyone remember?
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Although you do have, even though there may not be enough, you always have Rise of the Turtles.
That's good. That works. Rise of the Turtles.
I was going to go with Royal Rumble.
Well, maybe we do have enough. Why?
I was going to go with for the Bondage Crew, The Master.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, I underestimated the length.
As long as there are four titles available to us,
that's true.
We came up with an inadvertently sleazy. It all depends on how you say it.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, something like that. Yeah, it's
gonna... Africa. Yeah,
exactly.
All right, well, let's move onward to our ambush topics. Random topics we throw at each other, and we've had 2 weeks to work on this, so big things I'm expecting. Mac, why don't you kick us off?
All right, well, this topic is all very highbrow and artsy. Topic is the opera. Opera music or scenes that take place at the opera. Anything.
Did you get this idea from those opera. Fathom events?
Yes. Yeah. Those look so epic.
I know. Let's sit in and watch the opera, but not live. You just like it. It'll be awesome. Okay.
All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and go with my second favorite Dario Argento movie called Opera.
Yeah, that's
which is a fantastic movie and has one of the most gruesome not really gruesome so much as sadistic bits where the killer will put the heroine inside a box with needles taped under her eyes so that she can't close her eyes while she watches him kill all of her friends. It's quite effective and a fantastic movie.
Your second favorite, Dario Argento. What's your first favorite?
Suspiria. Ah,
gotcha. My opera one will be the giant blue freak from Fifth Element, whatever her name
is. Oh, yeah, good.
The one with the stones in her colon. Right. yeah. So speaking of Bruce Willis, there's some Bruce Willis out there. But yeah, the diva, right, the diva. I've always wondered what Plan B was going to be for all of this stuff. You know, if no one knew that the stone, like, if she was killed immediately, you know, and then she didn't die slowly in Bruce Willis's arms, you know, no one would have figured out where the tablets were, right?
I guess not. Yeah. Well, the monks must have known, right?
I guess, but they proved to be largely useless in that movie, so.
That's true.
I didn't have much hope for them, so.
All right, well, I had one that was kind of a highbrow answer. I'm going to go with a lowbrow, around-the-back answer. In Wayne's World, when they sing Bohemian Rhapsody is kind of a mini-opera from the Queen album, Night at the Opera.
There you go.
And Freddie Mercury was opera trained.
Nice.
Exactly. So, Wayne's World, I'm not sure if watching it now I'd get as much out of it, but I remember really liking that.
I really liked it. I really liked the soundtrack. The whole thing.
Yeah.
When that came out, I spent a lot of time listening to Dreamweaver.
Every time I sat down to use that particular Adobe web design product, I'd get that song stuck in my head.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Mac, what's your...
You guys remember the great 80s quote-unquote classic Cop Rock?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The hard, gritty television series in which everyone would bust out in song and dance for no reason. The very last episode of Cop Rock, they decided to go all meta because no one was watching by that point. It was one of the great failures of TV history. Mm-hmm. And so they were going all meta, and the whole cast comes out for the very last song of the show, and they're singing about how it's not over till the fat lady sings. And then sure enough, out comes the big fat lady from an opera and belting out the big opera tune. And so the fat lady sung,
gotcha.
And that's how Cop Rock ended.
They pushed that show so hard when it came out. There were so many ads for that, and I watched the first episode for maybe about 10 minutes. Oh, my God. Did it go a full season? Did they actually keep it alive that long?
I think it's 12 or 13 episodes.
Okay.
I have them on, you know, at conventions they sell these DVDs that are legally ambiguous, and
yes.
I have them on one of those.
Nice.
Was that in the second generation of early Fox shows?
No, I think it was NBC.
Was it NBC? Oh, okay.
Oh, I could be wrong. I don't want to be wrong.
ABC.
ABC.
All right, there you go.
All right, good.
So like the 50th.
Good job, intern. Good job, intern. Okay, I'll go next. Playful sporting goods used for lethal means.
Playful sporting goods?
Yes. So I want to see something more creative and fanciful than baseball bat with nails in them.
Oh, yeah.
So something better than the canoe and...
Canoe's not bad. Canoe is playful. That's
fire, what's his face?
Firestorm. That's
Firestorm,
not bad.
That's the one.
Canoe attack. That's not bad. It's good. Although I wonder, do people at EMS say, you like this canoe? It's playful. You'll enjoy this canoe.
Jaunty, perhaps.
It's a jaunty. Yeah, it is jaunty.
Let's see. Well, I can think of two examples with golf clubs.
Okay. That's
Is
good.
That playful enough?
I might as well. Why not? Go with it. If it's a putter, it counts. How about that?
Well, Casey Jones from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles beat up the guy with the golf club and said, I'm never going to call golf a wimpy game again.
Good.
And the Dolph Lundgren's version of the Punisher had a big fight scene with some kung fu master and he whipped out a golf club and beat the guy over the head with the golf club.
I don't know how I avoided seeing that.
Really?
I've seen that. The Dolph Lundgren Punisher. Stuff that you have to watch it.
It's a tough one, Dave.
No, nothing. No, Dario Argento presents lawn darts.
No badminton. No badminton rackets. Nothing like
he's
that.
He's Italian, so it'd probably be bocce.
That's true.
It probably would be bocce. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, nothing. I'll even remove the playful. You know, I'll even remove that. Just a sporting good.
Yeah, I don't
want
to use the baseball bat thing. That's just too easy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of something from one of the trauma movies, and that's the place where something like that would get used.
Hmm. I mean, something with a broom, you know, used in curling, perhaps.
It talks to Avenger Head Bob, yeah.
There's a tennis scene in Seinfeld where Kramer gets hit with tennis balls and goes into a coma almost.
Which ties back into the mop thing, because he also played Stanley Spadowski, who had a mop.
That's right.
Well, how come this...
These mops were sporting. What sport do you play with a mop?
I'm sure there is one if you look hard enough.
Yeah, my mom guaranteed that every time I mopped the floor, that was a sporting event.
You ever played Dead Rising, Daryl?
No, I did not.
Dead Rising, you familiar with the games, Dead Rising?
I know the name, but I'm...
Xbox games, you just run around a horde of zombies. Well, you can actually pick up a lawn dart, and throw it in the air, and it impales zombies. Not bad.
Really?
Yep. Well, I'll let you think about it. I'll go with mine first. Okay. I'll let you ruminate a little more. So I'm going to go with the boomerang from the crazy boomerang feral kid from Road Warrior.
Oh.
There you go.
I think that was actually a character's name, wasn't it? Like the feral boy? Or something?
Feral Child.
Feral
I think
Child,
and
his actual character name. But, yeah. Yeah, he used that thing quite effectively.
That's a sport.
Boomerang? Sporting good. Right? Yeah. You can get a boomerang at a sporting goods store. Sure. Yeah, somebody, there was the intern. Google search that. Dick Sporting.
It was a weapon initially. Like, so were lawn darts. So.
Yes, that's true.
Used by the ancient Aborigines to. Take down, stalling for time for Daryl.
Wait, are we all done except for me?
Yeah, yeah, that's
you.
Even Dave won.
That's right.
Dang.
All right, let's name some sports. You got your football. You got your baseball.
Croquet melon. Croquet melon.
Okay.
The shot.
Hockey puck. Hockey stick.
Don't want to do baseball. You got your cricket bat. Mm.
Sure, you got your football, I'm the last Boy Scout. You got your,
let's see.
Got all the Olympic
wrestling.
Sports.
Got a wrestling match. I guess it's not an Olympic
wrestling
sport.
Wrestling doesn't count anymore.
Right, sorry.
Right, it's not a sport any longer.
No longer a sport.
Swim trunks.
I can think of all sorts of ways to do this stuff. I just can't think of an example that I've seen.
We're not asking you to expound on your dark fantasies. We're just something from a movie.
There's hockey, of course.
Yes, it's hockey. It's a... Poker. Except poker. Cards. Playing cards. Everyone killed with playing
NASCAR.
Cards. NASCAR. Cars.
Hit with a car.
All right, you know what then? I'm going to go what should be an easy route. I'm going with with Jason's hockey mask.
All right. Did he kill people with a hockey mask ever?
He didn't kill people with the hockey mask, but it was integrally involved.
Okay. Granted.
And it's the best I got.
That works.
You also could have gone with Casey Jones and the hockey stick from the... Oh, Ninja Turtles movie.
So does Casey Jones appears twice in this spot, right?
Sure. That's how awesome Casey Jones is.
Casey Jones in the ridiculous live-action Teenage Mutant Turtles gets mentioned twice.
I guess I wasn't listening the first time.
Casey Jones' golf club swing when he took out – what's his face? What's that guy's name? Tonzo?
The scary bald guy.
Come on. We should build this. all right, Eric, why don't you go ahead while I try to figure this out.
All right. So I'm not sure if this is going to be easy or hard. We'll find out. TV shows where the theme song changes after the first season or changes in subsequent seasons.
I think Family Matters changed it pretty drastically from, I don't know. It changed it from one really well-known song that I can't even, the heck is it? I don't know, they changed to a well-known established song to your generic TGIF, lame-o, TV credit song. I'll do
apparently
that one.
It looks like the original one was What a Wonderful World.
Yes, What a Wonderful, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's right. And it was actually really odd. It was a pretty weird juxtaposition. It was so slow and, I don't know, then they just pushed it up with generic TV tune.
Let me think. I guess this isn't really a funny example, but Monk changed its theme song. It had the instrumental. Okay, well, it had the instrumental theme song in the started out with, and then later they changed it to the "It's a Jungle Out There" theme.
I think that was play. We're not deadly serious enough with our ambush topics. So
there's nothing really Monk there to riff on.
Monk was not my answer, but it was one of my backup answers. So
oh, really? Yeah. Well, there you go. Fun.
All right. We're going to go with
the hot seat.
Yeah, but this is a little easier. I'm not going to waste your time this time. Apparently, if I remember right, Miami Vice used to use "In the Air Tonight" by Phil Collins, and then changed to the Jan Hammer version after a couple of seasons.
All right.
I remember that because the "In the Air Tonight" opening was like super long, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was like half the song. And then they just went with what's remembered now. I think that's right. Yep, that's what they say. The Miami Vice Wiki confirms it.
Nice.
Which I have bookmarked, of course.
Good. All right. Well, I'll go with two quick ones because I can't choose which one I want to go with. First one, I just finished going through The Wire. And even though the same song is used in every season, they have a different version of it. It's all Tom Waits down in the hole. I think that's what it's called. They actually have the Tom Waits version for the second season, which I think is my favorite because it's the original, but then they have all the other ones. And then another one, there's a British TV show called Peep Show that's Mitchell and Webb's sort of, half-hour, not sitcom, but half-hour comedy show. And the first season was kind of like Monk, just a standard instrumental. And then all the subsequent seasons was Harvey Danger's Flagpole setup. It's another good chance to bring up that show because that show is awesome. I actually just saw that Hulu had the eighth season out, so I watched that recently. That's a good show.
Nice. All right, Daryl, wrap us up.
Ridiculous taglines for a movie.
Actual taglines.
Didn't we have a category in the Busters, or didn't we do a whole show about this, Mac, at some point?
Yeah, way back in the early days of the show, we did a whole episode.
We had some good ones. Yeah, look that one up.
There are some great ones out there.
There are some great ones. I wish I had more time. I wish I wasn't ambushed with this topic. Man.
You said ridiculous, right?
Yeah, or just god-awful. Not good ones. Specifically not good ones. But anything else, whatever.
The one I remember that really cheesed me off was Terry Gilliam's Brothers Grimm, that movie, which, I was so excited. It's a new Terry Gilliam movie. It's got all these movie stars in it. And the tagline is just so bland and so unimaginative. It's like they weren't even trying. The tagline on the poster and on the DVD cover art just says, "Once upon a time." It's like, yeah. Really? That's the best you could think of? Really?
I never saw that.
It's not bad.
I'm a Terry Gilliam fan, but that was one that hit. That and a couple of the other recent ones I just never wound up seeing.
Dr. Parnassus is really wild. You definitely deserve to check that one out.
Yeah.
Brothers Grimm is like Hollywood Terry Gilliam, but it's for what it is, it's pretty good.
Yeah, the last one I saw was Tideland, which I liked, which was...
That's a trip, yeah.
But yeah, I haven't seen anything of his since then.
All right, well, this one got a certain amount of play when the movie came out a couple years back, but the Yogi Bear live-action animated movies theme song was Great Things Come in Bears. Which was
good stuff.
It had tied with the way the movie poster was set up. It had certain connotations that were not so family friendly, but it's a bad tagline regardless.
I got two to choose from that I just grabbed randomly from my dossier. So you tell me what you like more. Dossier sounds pretty. My list of crappy movies I've reviewed over the years. Okay, we've got. So you choose which one you like better. We've got from Magma, Volcanic Disaster. Here, the tagline is, "One scientist has predicted Armageddon, but no one believes him." Okay? That's one. And then this is for The Art of War 2, Betrayal, starring Wesley Snipes. "He's back, and he wants revenge."
Jeez.
So both not really bringing their A game.
Yeah, the first one, though.
You like that one? No, Magma. Yeah. One scientist has predicted Armageddon, but no one believes him. Yeah. All right.
Is that the tagline, or was that just act one of the screenplay?
That's right. Well, I could do this all day.
Oh, there's tons. I got two as well.
Nice.
I was going to just go with the tagline for Suspiria, which I'll do second, but I already mentioned it, so I wanted to find a different one. This is for Chuck Norris's Silent Rage.
Oh, good.
Science created him. Now Chuck Norris must destroy him. They don't even use the character's name. Now somebody must destroy him. No, mustachioed Chuck Norris must destroy him.
That's good.
And then the Suspiria tagline is especially stupid for a couple of reasons. Let me get it up so that I can get it exactly right. The tagline for Suspiria, which is not only my favorite Dario Argento movie, but my favorite horror film, is the only thing more terrifying than the last 12 minutes of this film are the first 92.
Awesome.
All right, so it's unwieldy on the first end. The movie's only 97 minutes long.
So there's some overlap there.
And then
it's like 5 minutes.
It basically tells you that the ending of this movie is terrible. Out of hand. It just says, you know, you're gonna really like the first 90 minutes of this movie, and then it's gonna end and you're really gonna hate it. Yeah. And it's true. It's a really bad ending. That's really my favorite tagline for a lot of reasons.
Not bad.
Yeah, you'd think that would be like on a Roger Corman movie or something, not on Suspiria.
Right. But it's still true. It doesn't make it any less true.
I got a runner-up here. Let's see. A fast and funny DVD looks at menopause. It's called... The DVD is Menopause Illustrated, Blitzed by Menopause, A Guy's Guide to Understanding for Menopause.
Wow.
There's that. And I'm also combing through my stuff. I reviewed something called Blood Monkey and Blood Money. Wow, which is kind of interesting.
Double feature.
Double feature, Blood Money and Blood Monkey.
I guess the tagline is, the only difference is K.
That's right.
Something like that.
Every kiss begins with K. Okay, that's it. We're all done. I could really do this forever because there's so many great ones. And in fact, I might need to. I guess I know what I'm doing for the rest of this. I guess I know what I'm doing at work tomorrow, boys.
Oh, Dave.
Yeah.
That guy from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. His name was Tatsu.
Yes, I was close. Yes, Tatsu. I was very close. I think he was in the cartoon, right?
I don't know.
Oh no, maybe
later
not. Yeah,
seasons,
I don't think so.
Introduced
maybe not. Okay, well, that is it for this edition of the Friday Filibuster, so thank you for listening. FridayFilibuster@DVDBurner.com is our email. Mac, take us away.
Wax on, wax off.